Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Market Moves podcast channel, as today we will continue with our Around the Horn monthly fixed income roundtable podcast with our colleagues from UBS Asset Management. On a monthly basis, we do hear from top portfolio managers and business heads from Asset Management's muni, taxable fixed income, and liquidity teams. We do hear candidly from them on their views on the markets and what they believe you should be focused on within the fixed income space. So at this time, I will pass it over to Anthony Liotti, head of the Fixed Income SMA Advisory Group, to moderate this month's roundtable. Anthony, welcome back. I'll pass it over to you.
Welcome to the May 2024 edition of Around the Horn. Can't believe it's May already. Another week is ready to start up. And I'd say with every new week, we close out, and as we close out another, it always seems to bring a much anticipated amount of uncertainty, followed up, at least in my world, by weekend, trying to decipher how much each major or little data point or comment by a Fed official or economist had provided clarity as to the direction of the economy and then the correlated movement by the Fed. I'd say this, if, you know, listening to either, you know, the prominent, financial news outlets out there, it can be tiring and at times feel almost futile, yet it is nonetheless, important. Traders, PMs, you know, lenders, businesses, clients, the list goes on. We're all trying at some level, trying to judge the next move so we in turn could plan ours. Since we began airing, this Around the Horn call, over 2 years ago, I'd say that there's been one common theme that has been consistent throughout, and that is to expect volatility. And as we sit here in mid-May, that theme will likely not change at all. And another theme that will likely doesn't seem like it's going to be changing for a period of time is the theme for higher for longer, meaning interest rates should continue to remain elevated throughout 2024. And for fixed income investors, that is, in my opinion, as I've said before, a good thing. However, waiting on the sidelines until being told by the Fed that they're actually going to cut rates will probably be much too late to extend duration and take advantage of the higher rates that we've seen for almost some time now, a better part of a year. The second full week in May is another very big week for economic data. We're set to receive the ever-important PPI tomorrow, being Tuesday the 14th. CPI and retail sales on Wednesday with a slew of corporate earnings as well. And I say, generally speaking, if these numbers come in at or below estimate, the market will likely interpret this as very positive and expect the bond market to continue to rally in here. I think it would just be that the market would then assume that the Fed's work since 2022 is continue to drive inflation lower. Business growth is slowing down, and that would likely put the need for this great pivot that we've been talking about firmly back in the spotlight. Yeah, but the reverse is true, right? If we're above estimates, and again, there's so much data, and it could be a mix of the data that still needs interpreting. But if the latter is true, where we do beat or higher than estimates, I would say that you would probably see us touch upon the rates or revisit the rates that we saw again back in late April, which was right around 4.75 on that 10-year treasury. So very important week for all of us. So with that, let me turn it over to PMs to get their views and comments on the market. And we'll start, like we always do, on the short end of the curve with Dave Rothweiler. Dave, take us away, my friend.
Thanks so much, Anthony. Starting with money markets, balances remain elevated in the money market fund arena. We expect a moderate uptick in T-bill supply for about $300 billion the second half of the year, and that should be easily digested with assets continuing to move into the government and U.S. Treasury strategies with the approach of the final stage of money market fund reform in October. While Jerome Powell effectively took possible rate hikes off the table, it has been quite a journey in terms of rates this year. As we said in the past, the market got way ahead of itself in the beginning of the year, pricing in as much as 7 cuts. Contrast that scenario with Fed fund futures now pricing in roughly 2 cuts by the year end. As Anthony mentioned, this week's April PPI, which is Tuesday, and CPI on Wednesday will be particularly important. So on the duration side, we err on the side of continuing to be close to home with more of a neutral posture in both our front-end U.S. Treasury strategies as well as credit portfolios. Coupled with the backdrop of fairly decent earnings over the past quarter and higher all-in yields, we continue to believe that very strong demand for high-grade bonds will continue. High-grade bond spreads are about unchanged over the past week. U.S. credit started this week a little changed as last week's $55 billion in new supply is still being absorbed and more is lining up. Primary issuance continues to be brisk with at least 6 days pricing. You know, six deals are in the market ahead of PPI and CPI later this week. We do see some opportunities in the new issue market with some names coming in, let's say 35 to 40 basis points in 3 years, 3 year area and grinding in. Some of these names trade in the mid 20s and twos and sometimes even in the teens in the 1 year area. So the curve, it continues to be flat, but we do see opportunity for roll down on a name by name basis. So for more on corporate credit out the curve, I'll pass it along to Philippe.
Thanks, David. For USIG, I would say that the driver of the market continues to be yield. Buyers are flooding our market as 5.5% yield has historically been a good entry point for investors. Demand can be seen through fund and ETF flows, which we're approaching $200 billion year to date. And supply, as David mentioned, or corporate bonds is really not disappointing. Year to date, we're up 36% compared to the same period last year. And one trend that I think is worth mentioning is really the lack of dispersion in credit spreads right now. Credits of all qualities are trading pretty close together without much differentiation. So we are taking advantage of this, and we are using this dynamic to improve the quality of names in portfolios and at the same time having minimal impact on yield and spread of portfolios. Volatility also at multi-year lows, somewhat justified by the strong corporate fundamentals as well as strong U.S. economy. Recent economic data is still showing solid growth, moderating conditions in the labor market seen by non-farm payrolls and JOLTS. And those conditions are really ideal for USIG credit. The Atlanta Fed GDP now, latest estimate for second quarter GDP is 4.2%, so pretty high, growth still above trend. The Fed has explicitly stated that rate hikes are off the table, which removes a negative catalyst for IG spreads that was higher rates. And so business as usual here, strong technicals, fundamentals are and attractive yields, they continue to support U.S. investment grade. And we don't see this dynamic changing anytime soon unless we experience a more significant drop in yield from current levels. Moving on to portfolio strategy, we continue to like financials as fundamentals are sound, backed by research. We like energy, high commodity prices such as oil is leading to healthy cash flows and balance sheets. And we like utilities due to a combination of attractive valuations and fundamentals. I'll stop here and pass it over to Anders Nelson.
Well, thanks, Philippe. Spreads widened modestly in April, driven by the softer sentiment across all markets, but we're back to trading near the two-year tights as risk is doing better again. Spread volatility has been relatively muted given the solid demand driven by high all-in yields as well as supportive technicals and fundamentals. We're almost through with Q1 earnings and numbers are good with many high-yield issuers beating expectations and a third has raised guidance and leverage is unchanged over the quarter and remains near the 10-year lows and our expectation is for the default rate to increase but remain below the 4% historical average. On the supply side, we continue to see heightened activity with the majority of new deals going towards refinancing the upcoming maturity wall. This is a credit positive, but so far we're mostly seeing double Bs and single Bs tap the market, so we are closely watching this as the number of lower rated bonds increases as we look past 2026. And so we like an up in quality tilt with a credit selective approach as spreads trade relatively tight and we prefer the shorter end of the high yield market as a defensive way to capture these historically high yields with less interest rate sensitivity and the potential benefit of bonds being refinanced proactively at higher dollar prices. I'll now hand it over to David Michael to speak on emerging markets.
Thank you, Anders. Emerging market spreads widened in April after strong consumer data and inflation numbers brought another bout of U.S. Treasury volatility. While credit spreads widened, returns in emerging markets were still positive. This high all-in yield provides a nice cushion supporting emerging market returns. Emerging market debt supply significantly slowed in April. Net supply was negative $17.5 billion for the month. And we expect this trend to continue throughout the rest of the year with asset class rollover greater than new supply. This is a very strong technical that continues to support the asset class. The market continues to focus on elections. South Africa elections are on the 9th, where the ruling ANC party is losing ground in the polls and will likely need to form a coalition to retain power. The ANC party has been in power since 1994 elections, marked the end of apartheid. India elections are ongoing, where Prime Minister Modi's BJP party is on course to retain power for a third term, including the likelihood of a single party majority. Mexico will head to the polls on June 2nd, where it's expected that Claudia Sheinbaum will win the presidency, allowing AMLO's Morena party to remain in power. We expect elections in emerging markets and developed markets to create volatility. This volatility will create opportunities, and with the positive technicals described above or earlier, we expect emerging markets to continue provide robust returns. Now let me hand it off to Chuck for an update from our Muni team.
Thank you. After suffering through its worst monthly performance for the year of April, munis are actually enjoying a fairly good month currently in the month of May. So while investors were very much focused on paying state and federal taxes back in April, munis underperformed by 124 basis points. And yet here we are in May with supply up and demand up, and munis are outperforming by 109 basis points, leaving the market down approximately 55 basis points on the year. I say surprising in terms of technicals because issuance is up approximately 40% on the year, which is somewhat surprising. But demand remains fairly robust, with muni funds year-to-date experiencing close to $10.5 billion in inflows. So we have this nice balance of elevated supply but also elevated demand. We personally think that the elevated supply is a product of the national election later on in the year. So we're basically front-loading supply to the muni market over the summer, but we do expect things to slow down as we get closer and closer to the fall. We are advising investors to take advantage of this supply right now to get invested, because we do believe it will be more and more difficult to get invested as the summer progresses. Muni relative value remains on the rich side, but I think investors are really just focused on absolute yields with the expectation of the Fed pivot at some stage of the game in the future, and thus yields declining. Because of the extreme inversion of the muni curve, basically our favorite spot on the curve is the front end, say 1 to 3 years, where yields are achievable just slightly north of 3%. Avoidance of the belly of the curve, where not only are yields lower than the first 3 years, but that richness that I mentioned earlier continues to exist. We like waiting out longer on the curve, so using that front end and barbell position out longer, say 13, 14, 15 years in the construction of our intermediate strategy, we believe it will offer investors a long-term benefit in terms of performance when the Fed rate move does eventually reach that pivot point.
To the team, thanks very much, and thank you very much for listening, and have a great rest of the month. Bye now.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.